Since its inception in 1998, the Ireland Chair of Poetry has been a key element in the promotion, discussion and encouragement of poetry in this country. Part of the role of the Chair is to give an annual public lecture. Now, in the first in a new series, Michael Longley's lectures have been collected in a volume called One Wide Expanse, which has just been published by University College Press in Dublin. This will soon be followed by a volume featuring the lectures of previous Chair Harry Clifton, and the current Ireland Chair of Poetry, Paula Meehan, will have her lectures published at the end of her tenure. Michael Longley, Harry Clifton and Paula Meehan are all with me this evening. First of all, Michael, we should start by congratulating you on your recent award of the Griffin Poetry Prize in Canada for your collection, The Stairwell. How important are those type of awards, do you think?
Well, in a way, I disapprove of them. Until I win one, that is. But they are a contamination of the poetry scene. And this is a particularly trying way to do it. It's a bit like the Oscars. And there's a split screen. You remember the four people who are shortlisted. And one person looks radiant and happy and cheering. And the other three have fixed, rictus smiles. I mean, it's a very generous prize. And the man who founded it, Scott Griffin, is a delightful man. He made his money out of motor parts, suspension springs, shock absorbers, things like that. Well, I think shock absorbers, that's a very good definition of a poem. I'm delighted, very happy. But in a way, I think the world would be better without prizes.
You did say, however, in your acceptance speech regarding poetry, you said, "It's my life, it's my religion, it's the way I make sense of the world." That suggests a calling. Is that what being a poet is? Is it a calling?
It is a calling, and it is not a profession. And it's a mystery. And I take along with Paul, I take a quasi-religious view of it. I think one has to wait for poems to come to one. I mean, for instance, for 10 years when in my 40s, I didn't write anything. I thought I was finished. And I had enough equipment, enough skill, professional skill, to be able to produce forgeries. And that's the temptation. But I didn't produce forgeries, and I waited. And eventually the muse came back. And by the muse, I mean inspiration.
Is that Paula and Harry, both of you are actually nodding in agreement here. Do you subscribe to this idea of waiting for the muse to arrive, Paula?
Yes, but I also think that if you're at your desk, she has a good idea of where to find you. You know, that just because she's not around doesn't mean that you disconnect from the poetry world, you know. I think it's happening anyway deep in the subconscious. It's happening anyway in I think every cell of your body is tuned up for the poems. And Michael spoke so movingly about that time when the muse isn't with you or you're not in the creative zone. And the world can be very grey and bleak. I think the obsessional nature of what we do is the best kind of channeled into the making, you know, the physical making. I experience making poems as a very physical thing. Sometimes it is hammer and chisel and it's hard and problematic. And then other times the best poems just, it's like they just come. They just come through you, and it's a wonderful elevating experience.
Harry?
Yeah, I would agree. I think that a poem is an expression of the whole person. And, you know, as Michael stated, I think when the whole person has gone into a rest mode, it is possible for the technical side to continue on automatic pilot. And that's the real danger in poetry, that you can get something that looks like a simulacrum, but that isn't the real thing. Could I just make a point or two about prizes? Prizes, I would agree with Michael, and we've all, we're lucky enough maybe to speak as people who aren't articulating sour grapes here, and this is why we have the right to speak about prizes, I think. Prizes, in my view, are society's revenge on the poet for the inner happiness of writing a poem. Because society, as Plato said, is like a beast that feels something irritating on it. And it knows that there's somebody out there that's happy in himself or herself, and it has to kill off that happiness. And its way of doing it is by setting these innerly happy people against each other. And that is what prizes are, in my view.
All right, we better talk about the book I am holding in my hand in front of me, The Poet's Chair, Writings from the Ireland's Chair of Poetry. And as I said, the first in this series has just been published, One Wide Expanse, featuring three lectures from Michael Longley. Just that role, first of all, Paula, as the current incumbent in the position of the Ireland's Chair of Poetry, what is the role of the Chair of Poetry?
Well, I think each individual poet is encouraged and allowed to bring to the role basically what they feel they can offer. We work to a trust. It's composed of representatives from the two arts councils, because the chair is, a rambling chair. It whizzes north and south. And the three universities who sponsor us and give us, if you like, a kind of a home place every year: Queen's University Belfast, Trinity College Dublin, and University College Dublin. The Trust is extremely trusting. They've certainly, speaking for myself, they've supported all the work I do, both within the universities and out in the community, in the different projects and the different engagements. And it is it's a professorship. It's not a laureate. You are not poet laureates. We're given, you know, the responsibility of professing our belief in poetry and where we are coming from and what poetry means to us. So it has a public, certainly in my own case, it seems to have a huge public role or duty. And I love it. You know, I have embraced it. I think when this period is over, I'll go back up the mountain, back into, if you like, the more day-to-day quietness, where the poems actually come from.
Well, Paula, as the current chair, and then both Harry and Michael have been previous chairs, one of the functions or one of the responsibilities of the post is are these lectures that are given. Let me talk a little bit about one of the lectures that you gave, Harry, which was called Seriously Into Cultural Detritus, Writing the Rust Belt in Britain and Ireland. I think it was in there that you spoke about, you know, the commercial need of being a poet, and yet the responsibility of just doing your art, getting the filthy lucre thing out of the way, which I suppose relates back to the prize thing, does it?
Well, again, it relates back to a point Michael made about, that poetry is a calling. I think we are living in a time where great pressures are put on everybody to commercialise what they do, or to turn it into a pragmatic exercise. We're living in a time when poetry can just about be a career, and we're moving away from a time where the emphasis is on poetry as a fate or a destiny. So I think there's a very great danger there, and I would say that one of the things that's very important unconsciously within the life of poetry as it's lived down a whole life is to create what I would call a new bohemia. Because you might remember the old bohemia, the bohemia, say, of Baudelaire and Verlaine, was based on the idea of rejecting bourgeois values. But we need a new bohemia, I think, that rejects overly academic values, or the overly great temptation for poets to move into academe and to make too great an accommodation with academe. I value the part of poetry that stays out in the city, in the street, and takes greater risks.
In fact, you had a great quote within that lecture where you talked about, you know, you having to negotiate this uneasy place where perhaps you double the security, but you have the anger. Now, how necessary is anger? Maybe anger isn't quite the word, but how necessary is that passion, perhaps?
Anger is enormously necessary. You asked the question about the chair of poetry and what it is. I would say for me, speaking personally, it was the expression of a cold anger on my part that there were areas of life that I was living through that were not being acknowledged within the tradition of Ireland as it was being promulgated in universities, anthologized in anthologies, and that the sort of I felt I was living in a silent zone, so to speak. And I felt that the lectures were a platform for drawing attention to tensions and aspects and authenticities within Irish poetry that were not being addressed.
The title of one of the lectures that's published in this current collection of yours, Michael, is A Jovial Hullabaloo. Doesn't sound like a place that's full of a lot of anger if it's a jovial hullabaloo.
Well, when I accept what Harry says, my first lecture was a celebration. It was, in fact, Seamus Heaney who phoned me up and said, you know, you're going to have to take this post. And I think he thought it would be good for me. And I think it was good for me. But what scared me was having to write a lecture. And I'm not I don't live in academe, but the writing the lectures was like, it was very, very difficult for me. And I'm now very glad that I did it. I was in the first lecture, Jovial Hullabaloo. I was really trying to say that I believe poetry is a mystery, a very exciting one. It's a mystery, and that a good poem is a miracle. And I don't think you can teach these things. You can steer students in the right direction. And my first lecture was meant to be a celebration, and the second one was meant to be a celebration of Latin and Greek, and then the third one a celebration of the West of Ireland, which has been very inspiring. But I didn't have any grand plan. I stagger from one crisis to another, and occasionally poems result from the staggering.
Paula, in one of your lectures, and which this will be published then in when your volume comes into being, this one is Imaginary Bonnets and the Real Bees in Them. You quote the poet Marianne Moore. The title, I think, is Poetry, and then the immediate line afterwards, I too dislike it.
Yeah, well, Marianne Moore is a wonderfully playful poet. And in fact, I took my title from a famous phrase of hers, which is that poems should be like imaginary gardens with real toads in them. So my title, Imaginary Bonnets with Real Bees in Them, plays off that. But it also plays off, you know, the actual bees that I have in my bonnet, which are many and deafening, and the bee itself. So I took the bee, which is an emblem of community, and of course it's the ancestors' solace of light and sweetness in the dark. I took the bee and its mazy, slightly drunken sometimes journey from flower to hive as a kind of a metaphor, metaphor for the work the poet does, which is not commodifiable. It's impossible to put, a restricted monetary value of it. And our relationship with community is never direct. Like if we go on strike, we have to be on strike for like about 500 years before anyone notices. And then there's a big hole at the heart of the culture. But if the garbage men, the rubbish collectors go on strike, like if they're allowed anymore in this post-union times, the streets are smelling within a week. So our relationship to tribe, to community has always been this strange dance. And so my lecture really engages with that. And also it's a great excuse just to give voice to poems you love.
You're also, all three of yours are touching on there the whole public role of the poet. We recently, with the three of you, in fact, celebrated the life and work of William Butler Yeats, a poet and a senator. Our current president is a published poet. Does that tell us something about the place of poetry in our society?
I think it does. And I feel proud of our president being a poet. I don't think poetry, though, has necessarily a public role. For me, it's an inner adventure. Poetry is the opposite of propaganda. It encourages people to think and feel for themselves and to question what the church or the state might tell them.
So does the poet really have a public role? Could somebody be as active, politically active as Yeats was, you know, the setting up of the Abbey Theatre, his work as a senator, and that those very nascent days of this state? Can a poet have that type of power and be as active today, Paula?
When societies go into crisis, even though their lyrics might be about themselves, their lovers, their family, the garden, the moon in winter, there is something about that personal witness, that individual voice that threatens the fascistic mind.
Yes,
so if we have a politics and if we have a public role, it's to trust our deepest instincts in humanity and the songs we make on in that mode.
To wrap the discussion up and to bring us back to the recently published book of lectures of Michael Longley's, the role of the Ireland Chair of Poetry, what did it mean to you when you were there, Harry Clifton, and did it feed into your work?
Actually, what I liked about it was it gave me a rest from my inner self or private self, actually. And it allowed another kind of person to come through, a more polemical person, somebody who gets up on a platform and, you know, has other things to say that belong in the outside world and are the world of issues, so to speak. That was very important to me, to have that platform for 3 years. Another very important thing in the professorship for me was the connection with young people. It can be surprisingly difficult in a university situation actually to get through to that hidden mass of young minds in the process of formation who don't have a high profile, who maybe are in their first or second years, and who don't necessarily have access to you as somebody who's coming in on the so-called top end. And you have to delve to get to those people, and they are where the future is, that generation.
Harry held that position from 2010 to 2012. You held it directly in front of that, Michael, 2007 to 2010. What did it mean for you as a poet?
Well, I would agree with Harry. The important thing for me was young people, introducing them to poetry, which, believe it or not, is not emphasised in our English departments, where theory and dry criticism are too powerful. And I remember one class, I said to them, I want you to do something which is revolutionary. I want you to read a poem and enjoy it. And that's what I hope I did. I introduced them to poems. I encouraged them to look at their own writing. And I stressed the pleasure principle.
Paula?
Yes. At the end of the day, I think the real reward is that conversation with people around poetry. And I could bring a poem into the students I worked with in the university and I'll get, you know, different readings, different response. It'll be a little power thing that will open them up in different ways. I can bring the same poem out into the community and the poem itself, I'm not talking about my poems, I'm talking about the poems I would use. You see that the power of poetry validated and the power to enchant people, you know, to watch people get enchanted by poems, to watch them speaking them out for the first time. And I found a lot of my work, as I do generally, even outside the remit of the chair, I find a lot of my work is remediating traumatic experience that people have had with poetry in their education. And I know even as we speak, the kids have just come through yet another year of crucifixion in the poetry minds for the Leaving Cert and whatever the equivalent is in the North, the A-levels, I suppose. So an awful lot of people come to poetry with fear, and I have always found that a bit sad, but you can't be messianic. You know, if you start saying poetry is good for you, you've already lost, you know. But poetry has been a great site for resistance right through human history, and it's the great dreaming space that we're all entitled to.
Paula Meehan, Harry Clifton and Michael Longley there talking to me about their time as Ireland Chair of Poetry. One Wide Expanse by Michael Longley is volume one in the Poets Chair series, and that series is published by University College Dublin Press, and the volumes featuring the lectures of Harry Clifton and Paula Meehan will follow. Full information on Ireland Chair of Poetry and all of the events and activities they are involved in on the website, irelandchairofpoetry.org.